somebody in the audience probably lost their brown Android HTC phone. If you want to check out if you lost a brown HTC Android phone. I mean, I don't realize it. I understand it. Windows Phone 8 is so beautiful that you really want to change and get rid of that phone. But be careful, there might be personal data out there, right? So we're going to talk about Windows Phone 8 development, application development today. It's kind of, you know, like, it's kind of unfair, I think, to begin with, just to set the stage. A phone is a small device. A phone is a device that we expect to respond very, very rapidly. But yet it's a small device. It's a device with limited footprint memory, with limited processing power, with limited battery capacity, and we want an experience that should be better than any development PC, for instance. So in order to achieve that, there are some things you need to do as an application developer. Those are a few of the things I'm going to talk about. For the rest, we have 1 hour. We have an enormous challenge here because I don't have an application to show to you. So instead of showing you an application, I decided to actually build an application and along the way show you some of the features that Windows Phone 8, but especially the development environment, offers you. So my name is Mark Struis, I'm from the Netherlands.
Is it on now? Oh, I can see. What a great start. Did you guys hear about that Android phone? It's a brown HTC Android phone that somebody decided to leave behind. Check your pockets. And I can now, instead of shouting and screaming, I can actually talk, which is so much better. So let me just recap what I said before. I said, like, hey, we phone developers, we are in bad luck usually because, you know, like, phones are devices with limited resources. Phones are devices with limited battery capacity, and yet we want to have our phones to run faster than a typical, you know, like, high-end bare metal development machine. And thanks to Windows 8 and the implementation of Windows 8 on Windows Phone 8, we've gone, you know, like, a dramatic step in performance. I'm not going to show you an existing application today, but instead what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you how to build an application, and along the way when we're building an application, we're also going to see the development tools, we're going to see the emulator, we're going to see what kind of support you have from Microsoft. So my challenge is within an hour, minus 5 minutes because I was talking without a microphone, so within 55 minutes I'm going to try and develop an entire application from scratch. I'm also going to show you both the developer tool Visual Studio 2012. I'm also going to show you Expression Blend as a design tool. So I'm going to actually design a user interface, but don't be scared. I'm going to design a user interface as me being a developer. So it's going to look completely silly to begin with, because in the other room they're making beautiful things. I'm making boring buttons probably, with a little bit of animation, just because I can. My name is Maarten Struis. I'm working for Microsoft in the Netherlands, actually. I'm working in the embedded team, and I have a lot of affinity with phone development and Windows 8 development, and that's the reason and the excuse for me to be able to be on stage here. So here's the agenda. A short introduction into Windows Phone 8. Well, actually during the keynote we had that nice introduction already, so I'm really going to make that short. But I'm going to talk about the difference between Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8, because, you know, like, that's something that's important. What can you do? What can you share as far as code is concerned? What can you not share? And actually, I'm going to show you one application that I already prepared, just in order to show you how far you can go with sharing code, actually. My main focal point as far as programming today is going to be, I'm going to develop, you know, like, a managed application. It's going to be C# in combination with XAML. So I'm not touching, you know, like, let's say an HTML5 application that is hosted locally but in a web browser. We're not going to cover that. I'm also not going to cover C and C++ development today, but that's a really, really, really exciting area as well. And we're going to develop an application from start to scratch, and that application is going to have some specific Windows Phone 8 features in there, features that are not even available inside Windows 8. So actually, I'm going to also show that, you know, like, to certain extent, we are a subset of Windows 8 as far as APIs is concerned. But on the other hand, we also are a superset, because in some areas we have more functionality than Windows 8 has, which makes me really, really proud. So let's just talk about, you know, like, a few slides, a little bit about the introduction towards Windows Phone. And what you can see already, because many of these devices are available already, is that there's a lot of new, beautiful hardware out. Windows Phone 8 hardware. Nokia has, like a 920 and 820. HTC has an 8X. Samsung has some great devices, and more devices will be announced over the upcoming time. There's one trend, though, and I mean, especially if you look at Nokia and HTC right now, is that hey, devices are not just boring black bricks like my device, but they are colorful, they're shiny, they're beautiful. Another thing that's important with a Windows Phone 8 is that it's a completely personal device. So my Windows Phone 8 will look different than you guys' Windows Phone 8. Because of the fact that we have lifestyles, we have different sizes in lifestyles, we have different behavior in lifestyles, and we have the possibility to make the start screen appear as we like it. So for instance, my wife is, like a lifestyle on my start screen. So every time she posts something on Facebook or something, or if, if she forgot to do some shopping and I'm on the road, then she's posting me actually a message like, hey, can you bring some bread or something, whatever, And I see that immediately on my start screen on my phone. So it's a highly personal device. And it's a device that, in my opinion, is very, very pleasant to look at. Now that's, however, the end user experience. And the end user experience might be positive, but we as developers need to feed those end users with many, many applications. And thanks to the fact that Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 share the same experience for users, they are great enablers to, strengthen each other, I think. At the end of the day, people are, bored with just icons on some kind of a desktop or something. These lifestyles, they are really something that people really appreciate. And without, with one glance on a start screen, you can see the latest news, you can see how many emails you have to, read. You can see whatever else is going on with your contacts, with your friends, without applications even having to run, which is pretty, pretty cool. From a technical point of view, well, Windows Phone 8 has multi-core processor capabilities. As a matter of fact, the minimum requirement is that we have dual core processors. There's a new faster graphics processor on board. And the amount of RAM compared to, Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 7.5 has increased. So now the low-end device, Windows Phone 8, is a 512 megabyte device. But, the mainstream devices, especially, in Europe and the United States, are going to be 1 gigabyte devices. And new, we have multiple screen resolutions. But we don't have the nightmare of other phone operating systems that we have, a wild growth of screen resolutions, and that the only thing developers are working on is, which version of an operating system do I need to target? What are the changes with other versions? What resolutions do I need to target? Do I, need to, do specific things for version 3.x of an operating system or 4.y of an operating system? Basically, we take care of differences in the platform for you. And we have cool new things because of the fact that we are now Windows 8, so we are completely secure. We have removable encrypted storage possibilities, and we have near field communication. Finally, I might say, a lot of things will open up as chances for application developers. If you talk about those resolutions, we have three different resolutions, but basically, if you just target the good old 800 by 480 resolution, the WVGA resolution, and if you design your user interface towards that resolution, we take care of scaling it to the other resolutions, and we do that in a very smart, nice way that the experience, the end user experience, is always going to be fantastic if you design for just one single resolution. The reason that there's a larger resolution, for instance, it's fantastic if you have, if you want to watch television programs on your phone, because it's a full high definition, 16:9 resolution, the latter one there. And some people, it's also a personal choice, do I like to have a rather larger phone because I viewing experience is going to be extremely important for me, or does the phone need to fit in my pocket and then I might choose for, a little lower resolution. But at the end of the day, we want to have a fantastic experience on all those different devices. One of the key winning elements as far as the user interface is concerned, in my opinion, is the fact that we have tiles available. And all these styles can be used by every application developer. So basically with Windows Phone 8, we have three different types of tiles. We have flip tiles, and those tiles are actually flipping from front to back. So what you will have is a possibility to show something on the front of the tile and to write some text on the back of the tile. And the rotation will, you know, like execute a number of times. We also have an iconic tile, which is typically used, it's like more of a static type of tile, but if you have some really nice artwork in the middle, you can create beautiful, inviting tiles. And after all, at the end of the day, that's the only thing that you should worry about. Your tile is the first, let's say, the first meeting, meet and greet with your end customer. If your tile is inviting, the end customer, the user who installed your application on your device, will be tempted to actually start your application. And that's kind of cool, because if a user starts your application, then your application might become popular. If your application is a free application, which is ad-driven, for instance, then you've got to make revenue, because only applications that are executing and showing advertisement will actually make money if that's the model that you're using. If you're using in-app purchase, where, for instance, in a game, a user starts with a certain amount of levels and can purchase more levels, well, the only way they will do that is by actually starting your application, running your application on the phone. So it's important to invite users to start our application. And that's going to be a compete. I mean, if there's, you know, like 500,000 applications in a store, which we soon reach that limit, right, then how to pick your application? So you have to think not just about developing an application, designing a beautiful UI, but also about marketing, showing up nicely in the marketplace. I'm not going to cover that, but I'm just, you know, like I want to tell you that those are very, very important things to think about as well. And the last type of tile is a cycle tile, and everybody who has a Windows Phone device knows which one that is. If you take a look at the people tile, you have 9 little pictures that the system is just cycling through. And for an end user, it just seems continuously that your phone is alive, even though they're not doing anything, but just looking at that start screen. Beautiful experience for end users. Another thing that has changed is the lock screen on Windows Phone 8. So on the lock screen, we have reserved a little bit of space for up to 5 applications to give a quick status announcement. What you can do there is, for instance, if I would write an email application, I could show the number of unread emails. If I have maybe a picture application, I could show how many new pictures are available, you know, like maybe through Flickr or something. I could do many, many things there. One of those applications can also take over the entire lock screen. What we see there is actually, you know, like the calendar application has the capability of writing to the lock screen, so I'm immediately getting, you know, like information about my next appointment. And there's also a possibility to actually change the background, and that background can also be, you know, like a nice picture from inside an application. So in other words, our applications, if the user likes our applications, they might even put them or pin them to the lock screen. It's always the user, by the way, who's in control of deciding which tiles are on the start screen, which applications make part of the lock screen, and so on and so on. Now, one of the things is, you know, like we have Windows Phone, we have Windows Phone 8, we have Windows 8. They look very familiar to each other. They use the same programming environment, being Visual Studio 2012. But, of course, one of the questions that immediately pops up is, how can I share code between Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8? Are they completely identical platforms? Is it just a smaller screen tablet, a phone, or is it a tablet, is that just a larger screen phone or something? Or is there something different there? So let's just spend some time talking about that. I'm going to start talking on the very far left hand here about an old device. This is a Windows Phone 7 or 7.5 device. The reason I can see that immediately has to do with the fact that the tiles are either large or squared, but we don't have smaller tiles like we have in Windows Phone 8. Now, if you have a Windows Phone 7, and if you look at the underlying operating system which controls the phone, then Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 7.5 are powered by an operating system called Windows CE. Windows CE is a 32-bit operating system. It is mainly used in the embedded space. Windows Mobile, you know, like a couple of years ago, was making use of Windows CE for the rest, you know, like in the industrial automation controllers are making use of that operating system. And the compatibility between Windows CE and Windows 8 is the fact that they share the Win32 API. So if I would develop a Windows 8 desktop application, I could recompile that and it would run on Windows CE, but that's a lot of trouble, a lot of work. Now, this is the story for Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 7.5. So what we did in the last 2 years is actually, even though Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 7.5 were, you know, like new phones from Microsoft, but what we also did when Windows 8 bits became available was thinking along, like, how can we, you know, like, leverage the same experience both on the phone, on a desktop, and on a tablet machine. And in order to do that, what you basically need is the same operating system. Because one of the advantages of sharing an operating system is like, hey, Windows 8 has a very fast boot. It has a secure boot possibility. It has a possibility to encrypt your data. Those capabilities were not necessarily all available in Windows CE as an operating system. And to, you know, like, to duplicate functionality that's already in Windows 8 inside Windows CE, that would mean a lot of work. So instead, we took another approach. We said, like, hey, if we have a great kernel, and if that kernel will be used to, you know, like, make sure that we boot fast, that we have a lot of services available from the kernel for application developers, with a new API being the WinRT API or the Windows Runtime, why don't we try and get that running on Windows Phone 8 as well? One of the things that you get for free is the fact that, hey, if a Windows Phone 8 needs a device driver for a touchscreen, it's likely that that touch driver is already available, because here we have, you know, like, tablet machines that also need that touch input. So what we can do actually between Windows Phone 8 and between Windows 8 is share a lot of code, share a lot of device drivers, and share a lot of technology, like security, like fast boot, like, you know, like many, many things. So that's the approach that Microsoft took when we were, you know, like, moving from Windows Phone 7.5 to Windows Phone 8. As a consequence, and let me just be very honest here, it means that, you know, like, there's no way that a Windows Phone 7.5 device can be upgraded towards a Windows Phone 8. One of the big important reasons there is we were using a version of Windows CE that did not support multi-core processors. And one of the requirements for the hardware for Windows Phone 8 is that it needs a multi-core processor. So what that means is that there's gonna be, you know, like, it's not that we not want developers to develop for Windows Phone 7.5 anymore. So 7.5 will migrate to another version, being Windows Phone 7.8. with the same start screen experience, and probably with more things that we have available also in Windows Phone 8. And if you want to make money, if you want to reach the largest, you know, like target audience for your applications, then you should not forget about Windows Phone 7.8 later on. So, moving on towards Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. So the things we are sharing between those two different platforms is all kinds of operating system components. So the whole kernel is identical between Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8. Networking capabilities, graphic support, and multimedia are entirely identical. The device driver model, but also many device drivers, because we also share devices between a tablet and a phone, are identical. And what's kind of cool, and that's something we're only going to realize when the next version of Windows is going to be released, because that's going to be in parallel probably with the next version of Windows Phone, and they all, again, at that time, share the same great new capabilities that the next version of Windows will actually have. That's kind of my faith, you know, like, being an evangelist. I've been talking about Windows 8 and about Windows Phone for many, many months now. So, yeah, Windows 8, even though it was just released, you know, like, October 26th or something, it's kind of boring, you know, like, we need new bits, you know, like, we need Windows V next or something, but that's just me personally, I guess. However, very important, A Windows Phone 8 device is a smaller device than a tablet or a desktop machine. So even though we share APIs, it still means that Windows Phone 8 makes use of a subset of the Windows 8 APIs. So we have a limited amount of APIs that are available, but those APIs that are available on Windows Phone 8 are identical to the APIs that are available on Windows 8. So on Windows 8, if we're talking about the API, we talk about WinRT or the Windows runtime. If we're talking about that same API on Windows Phone, we're talking about WinPRT or the Windows Phone runtime. Just to distinguish, like, hey, this is a subset of the full WinRT API. And besides a subset, it's also a superset, because in a phone, for instance, is a device that speech should be a natural form of input. So we have WinPRT APIs that actually deal in a very, very easy and clever way with speech. So those are things that are not available on Windows 8, but are available on Windows Phone 8. And that's something that, as a matter of fact, I'm going to show you later in my demo. Now, the full WinRT runtime has about 11,000 different members. And what you have to think about is, you know, like, it's a number of classes with a number of methods, a number of properties, etc., etc. From those, around 2,800 are also available inside Windows Phone 8. So the first tip, actually, if you need to develop an application, well, actually, it's not black and white, but if you want to develop an application that targets both Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8, it almost makes sense to start with Windows Phone 8, because if you have a subset of APIs, well, that subset will run on Windows 8 as well. And maybe, you know, like using conditional compilation or something, you can extend the functionality of your Windows 8 version of the application. But if you're using 11,000 APIs, or methods inside an API, and you need to trim that down once you have a running application to port that application to a platform with less APIs, that might be a little bit harder to do. So you have to think about which approach you're going to take. At the same time, and unfortunately I saw a lot of samples there, since we are doing app excellence labs both in Belgium and the Netherlands, you know, like every 2 weeks developers can come to us at Microsoft, can, you know, like, get feedback on the application they're developing. And what we saw in the Netherlands typically is that, yes, people took Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, for instance, or Windows Phone 7.x as a starting point, because they already had existing applications, and they wanted to move them to Windows 8. From an API point of view, that makes a lot of sense, because, you know, like, a subset will also run on the larger set of APIs. But from a UI point of view, that's entirely different. So what we saw is that people were thinking, phone developers are thinking in small screens, which to me originally was always a challenge. But now with Windows 8 having, you know, like, huge screens, it's kind of a similar challenge to fill up that screen in a meaningful and beautiful manner. Now, that's typically the work of a designer, but in smaller organizations, the developer and the designer are typically one person. So you have to think about that. And what we saw in the Netherlands is that people designed Windows 8 applications within the center 800 by 480 amount of pixels. There they had a UI and some large black area around it, which is not a good experience. So if you're porting from Windows Phone to Windows 8, your software, the amount of work you have to do on the actual software is going to be limited, but you need to reinvest, you know, like, time in a user interface. If you're doing it the other way around, if you're going from a Windows 8 user interface that might be easier scalable towards a Windows Phone, but you need to do a little bit more of work if you, as far as code is concerned. So those are things you have to keep in mind, actually. Now, what I said already, Windows Phone 8 has, to a certain extent, more APIs as Windows 8, and those APIs are typically in the speech area, in networking, voice over IP areas, and in access to PIM or your personal information. So it's very, very easy to get access to calendar information. And the way our lock screen works is a little bit different from the way the Windows lock screen works. Now, having said that, this was, you know, like, the kind of the short, well, that's what I was hoping for, kind of the short introduction of Windows Phone 8, its relation towards Windows 8, etc., etc. So now let's zoom in and talk about the development tools. I have four more slides, and then I promise you, then we're going to go into code, and we just, you know, like, for the remaining 30 minutes, we're just going to show code. So what's important with development tools is that you always have to use the right tool at the right time. If you're not doing that, then you're not efficient and you're not getting the best use of your day and use of your time. So basically, if you're a software developer, you can spend your entire, you know, like time using Visual Studio 2012. There is a free version of Visual Studio 2012. It's an express version specifically for Windows Phone. It has full capabilities, full functionality. So any application you can develop, you can also develop for using the free version. There's a question there. Why? And now it's gone. And it's back. I didn't see it here. Thank you very much for that. So if you're using Visual Studio 2012, in a free version, you can do everything that you could also do with a paid version. You can develop applications for Windows Phone 7.1, which basically is the previous version of Windows Phone. The operating system numbers are different from the phone number, so 7.1 actually targets Windows Phone 7.5 devices. Don't ask me why we have those numbers. It seems to be extremely difficult to have a unique, uniform numbering system inside Microsoft, but that's the way it is. And you can develop Windows Phone 8 applications. With Visual Studio, of course, you can debug applications. You can find performance bottlenecks. But you can also use some test tools to make sure that if you're submitting your application in order to get certified and be able to, you know, like appear in the Windows Phone store, we also have tools available to allow you to run a lot of those tests already from inside your own Visual Studio environment. So letting your application certified by us should not give you any surprise about the behavior of your applications. For a few things, it makes a lot of sense, even as a developer, to know a little bit about Expression Blend. For instance, if you want to create animations on your user interface, well, Visual Studio doesn't give you support for that. So you need Expression Blend in order to get support for creating animations. Using Expression Blend, the idea, the original idea is like, hey, we create a user interface in Blend. That user interface is actually stored in something called XAML, a markup language that defines the user interface. And you try to get as loose a coupling as possible between that XAML and actually C#, C++, or C code, or VB.NET code. There are very nice development patterns that are available in order to guarantee a very loose coupling between user interface and actual functionality. One of them is the MVVM light pattern, on which a lot of information has been published also on MSDN, so we are focusing toward that same road there. For my demo today, I'm not gonna bother about that. So we have a limited amount of time, so the only thing I'm gonna do is immediately writing some code behind, but keep in mind, I'm just showing some capabilities of Visual Studio later on. The intention of my application right now is not to develop, you know, like a beautiful application from an architectural point of view. Now, if you install Visual Studio, you also get Device Emulator. And the Device Emulator, well, for me personally, it's the first target device that I'm using to test out my applications. It has a couple of really nice features for Windows Phone 8. So what we can do now is simulate network conditions. So what I can do is start my application, and then from inside Visual Studio, I can say like, hey, instead of a 4G connection, I'm now on a 2G connection. Does that have consequences for my application? Or the network connection is entirely dropped? Because what you often see is that an application is running beautiful, and then you're driving in a car. I know you're not supposed to work with applications when you're driving, but you know, like sometimes I cannot resist myself. But if you go through a tunnel and you lose a network connection, then often the experience is that, hey, that application expected a network connection. So instead of, you know, like doing the proper exception handling, the application does what my applications typically do, the application crashes. And at home, when I was developing my application, because for me application development is purely a hobby, but at home when I was developing my application, I never ran into that issue because I have a perfect network connection there. So by simulating a bad network connection, that's very, very valuable. Also, it's typically bad actually from my point of view. What I used to do was always asking, you know, like my boss, said like, hey, Windows Phone 8 is there's three different resolutions, so I need at least to have three different Windows phones, you know, because I want to have one for every resolution. My boss is not, you know, like, he's not dumb, actually. So he said, like, well, why don't you use device emulator? Because that comes with all those resolutions. And you get one phone. And the other resolutions, you just test them on device emulator. And that's the way it works. Another thing that I always thought was very, very cool is that to test out location-aware applications before device emulator, there was no way. You always got a fixed set of location readings somewhere building 52 in Redmond on the Microsoft campus. And if I wanted to test out my application, you know, like maybe a route navigation application or something, with real data, there was no way. Another great excuse for me to ask my boss, like, well, you know, like my application works fine here in cold Europe, but how about Hawaii? I need to travel there to test out my application. It's not necessary either, because you can set location readings, you can record different locations and play them back towards the emulator. So location-aware applications can be fully tested. There's one thing, I mean, you almost don't even need a real device, except for one very, very important thing, and that's, at the end of the day, since touch is our primary input mechanism, together with speech, by the way, but since touch is very, very important, and since devices are smaller, but also readability of data is very important on a phone because the screens are smaller, you need a physical device to get that real user experience. I mean, on a touchscreen, device emulator also is enabled for touch, so you can use touch on your device emulator. But the feeling is still a little bit different from a real phone. So at the end of the day, you still need a real phone, but you don't need multiple resolutions, and you don't have to worry about the fact that, hey, how about location testing? Can I do that completely? Yes. How about networking? You can get a complete network simulation with different types of behaviors, which is, in my opinion, I mean, those are winners, you know, like those make our applications way, way, way better. So I've been talking about the tools right now, so how do you get the tools? Well, that's very, very easy. Your one central stop is going to be dev.windowsphone.com. So we have dev.windows.com for your Windows 8 development and dev.windowsphone.com for Windows Phone 8 development. The tools are free in an express version. If you already have, you know, like a paid version of Visual Studio 2012, no problem, because they integrate seamlessly in that as well. But dev.windowsphone.com is also your central starting point to read articles about how to get started with application development for Windows Phone 8, but also in-depth technical articles. There's an announcement right now, and unfortunately I didn't take it on my slide deck, so maybe afterwards I'm going to point you to a URL there. But next week, two good friends of mine, Andy Wigley and Rob Tiffany, are starting a four-day Windows Phone 8 development camp. It's 4 days with some great content. And they're doing that, you know, like they're presenting it live from Redmond. Now, time difference might be a challenge. All that stuff is also recorded. And they're going to go from how to get started with an application all the way towards enterprise development and all that kind of good stuff, gaming, etc., etc. So that's definitely some content you don't want to miss if you're interested in phone development. Then once you have the free tools, you can start working, developing applications, and you can deploy them to the emulator. But if you want to have, you know, like your applications being deployed to a real device, to get that real feeling of your own applications running on a device, then you need to register for a developer account. And that developer account will have an annual fee of, I'm not sure, €75 or something. With that, you get, you know, like the possibility to unlock just commercial phone devices, so you don't need a special developer device or whatever. And you can unlock a number, I think, up to 3 different devices. And what that means is that you can connect your phone just through a USB cable to your development machine and deploy applications immediately from Visual Studio towards a Windows Phone 8 device. But you need a developer account for that. And again, if you want to register for a developer account, very, very easy. Just go to dev.windowsphone.com, and it's just a matter of, you know, like leaving your what is it, your Live ID, or formerly known as Live ID, these days known as your Microsoft account. So having said that, I think, you know, like for slides, we've had enough. So I'm just gonna end this slideshow. Let's do some real work. And my real work today starts in starting Visual Studio. I hope, yeah, this is visible, cool. What I'm going to do is I'm going to start a new project. And if I'm starting a new project, what you can see, this is the express version of Visual Studio. I have a lot of different choices. I can create just a regular Windows Phone application or a data-bound application that gets its information from a database and binds to a number of UI controls. I can also develop a Windows Phone HTML5 application. Well, that's what that line implies there. That's not entirely true, and this is confusing for people, I bet you. Because if you're developing for Windows 8, you can develop native HTML5 applications. If you're developing for Windows Phone, you cannot develop native HTML5 applications. But what you can do is develop an application, which is a C# application, that hosts, that embeds a web browser, and you can execute local HTML code inside that web browser. So it's not a native application, it's still hosted in IE10, but you can, in that way, create HTML5 applications. And the idea behind that is that, hey, it's still probably very, very easy to target multiple platforms by that particular model. I can develop a number of agents, which typically are, you know, like pieces of functionality that will run in the background on the phone. I have a choice for Visual Basic with the same type of applications, and I can make use of native applications. Now, one of the ideas with a native application is that, hey, gaming, where you need, you know, like a lot of processing power probably, is a perfect candidate for C++ applications. But what you also can do is develop a Windows Phone runtime component, which basically is a component that extends our WinPRT runtime. And you can create dynamic link libraries and static libraries in C or C++. What that means is that I can take legacy code, I can take open source code that is written in C or C++, bring it in my solution, and all of a sudden make use of that particular code inside a Windows Phone application. Now, of course, one of the things that's important is still that if that open source code, or if that whatever code you have, you know, like maybe your own legacy code written in Visual Studio 1.52 20 years ago or something, if you still have that code available, you can use it inside a Windows Phone application, as long as the API you're programming against is known inside that environment. I mean, that's the only thing you need to be aware of there. But let me just take a Windows Phone application. And let's call this app day. Let me try and type app day. Okay, it's going to be a regular Windows Phone application, nothing special there. And what you can see is I can target Windows Phone 7.1 to create Windows Phone 7.5 or Mango applications, or Windows Phone 8 applications. If I develop one of these applications, the application will run on a Windows Phone 8 as well, because we are backward compatible. The only thing is, if you want to make use of cool new features, then you're going to target the Windows Phone OS 8.0, which I'm going to do right now. So what's happening in Visual Studio is just, you know, like creating my initial solution. It's starting a designer, and it gives me my, well, my first UI. It's kind of a boring UI, and I'm going to, you know, like kind of keep it boring. And the first thing I want to do right now, we have 20 minutes, so we should be good, actually. Let's deploy this application. And I'm going to deploy it to an emulator. And I have a different number of emulators available. A low memory emulator in VGA, a full memory, meaning 1 GB, an XGA, and a high definition. I'm going to go for that XGA emulator. I'm just going to deploy my application. And what's going to happen is that the emulator is started right now. I'm going to make it a little bit smaller. Let's go to this resolution, for instance. The emulator is starting, and here is the emulator. You get the full experience of a Windows Phone 8 device with different tile sizes and different types of tiles. Visual Studio now is remotely connecting to that emulator, and Visual Studio is starting my application inside the emulator. So this is my application inside the emulator. There are a number of fancy numbers there that are completely unreadable. These are performance counters, which give an indication, but you need, you know, like on a on a beamer that's kind of hard to see, but what those performance counters give you an indication for is the graphic performance of your application, but also the memory use of your application. So you can immediately see if your application has some performance bottlenecks. Be aware, though, that if you want to publish your application on the Windows Phone Store, you need to have some screenshots of your applications. And I still see many, many examples of people taking screenshots with these counters here. The reason is that those counters are enabled in debug mode, and right now I am executing in debug mode. If you build it for release mode, or if you just, you know, like make sure that those statements that show these counters are commented out, then you get a nice image of your view and not those nasty counters there with it. I'm going to terminate the application, and let's just quickly focus for a little bit towards device emulator. So this is my device emulator. I'm going to make my Visual Studio environment a little bit smaller just in order to see them both together. And what I can do now, if I go to Tools inside Visual Studio, you can see here something called a simulation dashboard. And inside that simulation dashboard, what I can do is lock my device emulator. So by just clicking that radio button here, I can go from lock to unlock. That is very useful, because what I can now do is start my own application. My own application is here, somewhere. Oops, not there. Come on, let me go back to my own application, or let me try that at least. My own application is App Day. It's installed on my phone, it's running now. And you can see now I'm not hooked up to the Visual Studio environment, so now you don't see those performance counters here. What's going to happen now if I take that lock screen, the idea is that my application now goes to the background, and my application needs to deal properly with that. So once I return from the background, my application should continue working as if it did not interrupt at all whatsoever. Very easy to test with this. What I also can do, because some applications have difficulties with reminders all of a sudden appearing as well, so I can trigger reminders. I'm just going to snooze this one and see what's going to happen. The real cool part here is the next one. If I'm going to, let's say if I go to search some information, I'm going to use Bing there, and I'm going to enable network simulation. I'm going to say, like, hey, I have no network. I'm going to apply that here. Now, if I'm going to do here something like www.msn.be. Oops. And let's just see. Let me keep my fingers crossed that my demo is working. It's searching. It's taking its time for sure. It's taking longer time and longer time. So in fact, what I'm doing right now is I'm testing my application that reaches out to the internet with no network connection. We can't connect right now. So here's, you know, like Bing actually takes good care of this. It gives the user a friendly error message and gives the user a hint of what might be going on in order to solve the problem. If I now enable network, maybe in a 3G way, here. I'm going to go back here. I'm going to say, like, well, let's try this again. So I'm going to wait again. Now, this is scary. What you see is right now I do have a network connection. So it's not the fact that I'm having a network connection that is cool, but the fact that I can make sure that while I'm testing my application, I don't have a network connection. Those are scenarios that were always hard to test. Another thing you can do is inside the emulator itself, you can have additional functionality available. So what I can do with the emulator is making use of the sensor. So what you see right now is that, hey, if I'm moving my device, I'm changing from portrait to landscape mode. And is my application ready for that? Is my application working properly with that? Another thing is, if I go to some mapping software here, let me go there to maps. What's going to happen here? I'm going to allow something. And what you see, if I'm having a map available, what's going to happen typically is that if the map is loaded, it's going to be somewhere in Redmond. It's taking some time. That's just depending on the internet connection that I'm using. But what I can do is, instead of being in Seattle, where we are finally appearing, there we go, Come on. I'm in a hurry. We only have 10 minutes and I need to develop an application. That's really going to be a challenge. Maybe we, well, maybe I take 15 minutes. Okay, at some time something would have come up here, and what I could have done is, instead of going to Seattle, I could have gone to Antwerp in Belgium. There's Seattle, so we are in Redmond somewhere. I could say like, hey, but instead, you know, we are not there, we are kind of here somewhere. And what's going to happen now is that my map knows that, hey, he changed some location there, so now it's going to navigate to that particular location here in Antwerp. I'm not going to, oh, okay, here it is already. It's a little faster right now. So in that way, you can actually test location-aware applications. I can also take screenshots from my device or device emulator. So those are things that device emulators really, really handy. And let's just now go ahead, and I'm going to just, you know, like go back to the slide screen here. And let's design our application. That's the next step. So in order to do that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to Solution Explorer here, and I'm going to right-click on my main page. I'm going to open that in Blend. So I'm going to design my application in Blend. What's happening is that that same page is now opened in Expression Blend. And what I could do now is, you know, like maybe change the title of the application. So I can go to this title here, my application, and I could say like, hey, I'm going to change this property. I'm going to say maybe something like mini browser. And I'm going to do the same for the page name here. I'm going to say like speech control. No, something like that. It's not a beautiful UI, but okay. Now here on my content panel, I can do something else. I can what I want to have is a number of columns and grids. So I'm going to define a column and I'm going to define a row inside my grid. And now I'm going to change those a little bit. So this content panel is a grid. I'm going to search for my columns. And what I want to do is define my columns. My first column needs to fill up the entire space of the screen that is available. And my second column needs to automatically reserve the number of real estate it needs for some UI controls. I'm going to do the same thing with rows. So here's my row definition collection. I'm going to do something similar. But the height of the first row needs to be automatic. The height of the second row, it can use whatever screen area is left over. And the idea for my application is I'm going to create a little browser application. So what I'm going to do right now, in order to have a browser application, I need something like a text box. I'm going to dump that text box here on that content panel. Hop. So this is my text box. I'm going to give that a name, TBURL, for instance. And I'm going to make sure that the text box, well, I don't need to do anything actually for it. So now I have some real estate left here. What I'm going to put in there is going to be a browser, but I want to make this more fancy. So what I also want to do is get a stack panel. And that stack panel, I'm just going to drop that here as well. Okay, now I have a stack panel. I want to have that stack panel next to my text box here. What I'm going to do with that stack panel is I'm going to set its width and height to auto, so it effectively disappears. I'm going to make sure that it's going to be in the first column. And I want to have it horizontally oriented. And now, the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take a button. I'm going to drop that button on that stack panel here. And I'm going to take another button. I'm going to drop that here as well. So I have two buttons, a text box, and that's basically it. This button here, I'm going to give that a name. I'm going to give that the name button, oops, button go. And the other thing I'm going to do with that button is actually its content. I'm going to call that go. I'm done. And this button, I'm going to call that button speak. And I'm going to give that a name as well. And just going to say there. It's kind of a silly user interface, but anyway. The content should be safe. Somebody's calling me. Should we ignore? I think so. okay. Are we good to go? I hope so. Button speak, button content. Oh, come on. Why did that not take over? Oh, that's because I'm on the wrong button. Come on. This was button go. That was the idea. And go. Then I need to select this button here. I'm going to say this is button save. And it's going to be save. Okay, cool. Now this is basically my user interface. Except for one little thing, I still need a browser here. A web browser. So I'm going to take a web browser as well. I'm going to drop that on our content panel. And what I'm going to do with that web browser is actually, I'm going to define that that should live in row 1 and in column 0 with a column span of 2. And what I want to have that web browser is, I want to have that filled up the entire screen. I'm going to give it a name as well. And this is my designer work, so I'm going to call this browser. Okay, that's cool. What I'm now going to do is actually I can build from inside Expression Blend, and I could be executing my code from inside Expression Blend. But that would not make a lot of sense, because there's still some code to be written. So I'm going to save this application right now. And what you can see if I'm terminating Expression Blend, that immediately Visual Studio tells me, like, hey, there is, you know, like, there is something that has been changed. You want to load your new user interface inside Visual Studio. Well, I just did that. And now I can take this Go button. And what I could do here is something like take a variable of URI string or something like that. And that should be equal to HTTP plus, maybe to do add something in front of that to make sure that I don't have control characters there, plus something being my text box URL dot text. Okay, and I have a browser. And what I now can do is navigate to that entered web address. And I could say I take a new URI, and that URI is the URI string here. And that's an absolute kind of URI. And I can just deploy to my emulator. Here we are. Oh, and there's that simulated reminder that still pops up continuously. So let me just dismiss that. This is my application. Well, it still says text box, that's a little too bad. What I can also do with my to enter data is by using the page up and page down buttons. I can get rid of that keyboard and actually type on my own keyboard. So msn.de, for instance, and I can do a go. And then hopefully we get the Belgium MSN site there. But this is, you know, like, this is basically, this is old school stuff. This is Windows Phone 7 stuff. This is something that is not cool. So I'm going to make it a little bit cooler right now, because I have a save button there. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to terminate my application. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to create a variable of type dictionary. I'm taking a dictionary with a string and another string. This is my voice input. Here's a new dictionary. I'm just gnawing up a new object here. And inside that object, I'm going to create something. Let's call this Bing. And with a URI of www.bing.com. Okay, cool. Let's make a comma there. Let's do another one. Because I know that, you know, like, especially in Europe, we don't like a monopoly. So let's take an alternate search engine, why not, and make that Google. And I have another button. So we are completely right, but we're fine now for the European community, right? I hope you got it all. I'm going to take a click event on another button. And what I'm going to do now is the following. I'm going to say something like, I'm going to create a recognizer URI. That's going to be a new speech. Now, this one I need to actually take a look at my cheat sheet, Cognizer UI, because it's not known yet. So I need to, I need to type new first. And then the other thing is it would extremely help if I import the right namespace, which is speech recognition. This is new for Windows Phone 8, actually, and it's also not available on Windows 8. So my recognized UI. On it, what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell it, I hope, I'm going to tell it recognize UI dot settings dot, where's my grammar? Recognizer dot grammar. Okay, I'm going to tell it at first that I'm going to add a grammar, and the grammar that I'm going to add is something that I just defined here. The grammar that I'm going to add is something that I just defined here, which is called voice input. I'm going to add a grammar that says, and if we take a look at the parameters, what I need first is a key. So I can say lines, this is just my unique key. And what I'm going to add is an enumerable of phrases. And I just defined those in my voice input, and from there, the keys collection. So with that, hopefully, yeah, that's working, cool. Now I can do some other things. I can go to my settings, and I can say like, hey, I have some example text. And my example text could be something like, for example, say Bing, right? I'm just giving some help to the user. I am also doing something like on the settings as well, my listen text. That could be something like, which search engine do you want to use? And then for example, say Bing. Well, that's all reasonable, okay? What I now can do is the following. I can now actually listen to the speech engine. And I'm going to wait, do that asynchronously. This is another very important thing, and the reason why Windows Phone 8 is so fluent, that everything that takes longer than 15 milliseconds will be executed asynchronously. And that makes it really snappy. What happens underwater is that we, in fact, start another thread in order to take care of recognizing the sentence that a user is gonna speak, because of the fact that we don't know exactly when that user will actually speak to the microphone and get that sentence in. And in the meantime, our user interface is still gonna be responsive. So we're gonna recognize with a UA async. Okay, now if I have a result, what I now can do is the following. I can take a variable found, for instance. And found is going to be the result that I just got. And from there, I'm going to take the recognition result, and from there, the text property. And now, this is software engineering that I love, because now what I can do is take this stuff here, just copy that. I could have done another method that would have been better, actually. And instead of this text box, I now take the found result and just add the HTTP // in front of that. What you can see here is that I still have one issue. The issue is around the fact that now this method should be asynchronous, which I tell the C# compiler by adding the async keyword. What will happen is that if I execute this code, the code will be blocked here, but it will be blocked on a separate thread. So the user interface thread will not be blocked by the fact that I need to recognize some speech, and the user in the meantime can, you know, like press on all kinds of other buttons. I'm gonna try and run it. But I'm going to do that in a little different way. So this is the application. I could now try and run it, but I'm going to terminate it again. And let's remember what the name of the application was. Let me see, App Day, right? I need a microphone because unfortunately the microphone on my system was is not listening to me, so I have this headset right now. And we don't hear feedback because of that. But that's okay. Accept. I guess. Open App Day. Again. Start App Day. See, it listens to particular commands. I could still do the go button, but I can also then. And what you can see now is that, hey, my application crashed. There's a reason for that. This is all staged. This is all, I was ready to go. Well, what happened is that in my application, I got an exception. There's a reason for that. And this is the last thing I need to fix inside my application. If I want to make use of certain resources on the device as an application developer, I need to specify what I want to do. And I do that in the manifest file. So in this manifest file, you have a number of capabilities. And what I need to enable is the microphone, but I also need to enable the functionality for speech recognition. And now, if I'm doing this and enabling these capabilities, the user of my application will in fact be warned, like, hey, this application is going to make use of speech recognition. Do you agree? So the user is in end control. I'm going to deploy it again. Here we go again. Going to take a look again. Going to say Bing. So now it says, do you want to use that search engine? Yeah, I'm cool with that. Bing. Didn't catch it. Okay. Bing. Heard you say Bing. And she's actually telling it to me. So now let's see what's happening. Okay, Bing, well, we don't have that thing there. That's fine, doesn't matter. If I would have said Google, it heard me say Google. And now the trick, if I still would have had that connection, is of course that since I did not change that, but it's too bad that, you know, like this cool demo just failed, but it would have gone to Bing anyway, right? I mean, that was the whole idea there, that I can force people to go wherever they want with speech input. The real cool part, though, is that speech input, think about it, if you have speech integrated in your applications, that's something that users are going to love. I mean, this is a real, you know, like, highly mobile device, a phone, of course, and that also means that since it is being a highly mobile device, people will have it on the move, and if you can talk to an application and listen to what an application has to tell to you, that's something that is really, really nice, in my opinion. So what I just want to, you know, like end with is a little conclusion, hopefully, that that hopefully we see that, okay? So I hope you got the impression, like I have, that, hey, developing a Windows Phone application, it's not hard. It's actually easy. I developed an application from scratch. I needed my cheat sheet one time because I forgot the name of a particular API. Usually you have IntelliJence for that. I did not show you the submission process because we are running out of time, but I'm going to stay at least, you know, like during the lunch break here, so if you want to talk about that, please feel free to do that. A Windows Phone device and a Windows Phone 8 device, they are very personalized. So my device looks different from your device, but my applications can also make the difference. As you saw, I can use voice to actually activate functionality inside my application, but I can also use voice to start my application. Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8 share the same underlying operating system, important, but we are using a subset from Windows 8 and sometimes a superset. From an application point of view, you can share code as well. And again, during the lunch break, if that is something that you're interested in, come talk to me, because I can show you a WPF application written a couple of years ago, migrated to a Windows 8 application, migrated to a Windows Phone application. They all share the same XAML, and they all share the same code. So we are highly compatible there. And last but not least, actually, and this is, and hopefully, I mean, this is the message. If you go away tonight, and if you remember one thing of this day, developing Windows Phone applications is fun. not me sweating here, but you guys doing it. And I hope that, you know, like, you're going to fill up the store. Don't forget Windows 8 applications. But yes, go ahead and go for those Windows Phone 8 applications. We need them out there. There's going to be some great content the rest of the day here. So I hope you have you're going to have not just a fantastic lunch, but also a fantastic day for the remainder of the day. And thank you very, very much for attending. And I'll be around for questions later on. Thank you.